Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Wood, and my guest today
is Ole Utzon.
Is Ole Utzon, as I call him.
Yeah.
Say that again.
Ole Utzon.
Okay. Ole was born in Greenland, which means he is of Danish nationality. And you've just started a wine company called
Esbo og Utzon Vin.
So that's presumably a partnership between you and somebody else?
Yeah, a guy called Jon Esbo, who's been in the wine business working for others for 13 years, and we're now doing this in partnership.
How long have you been involved in wine? Is this a new thing?
So in terms of being involved in wine, I've written about wine for 25 years, particularly Italian wine, and with a special emphasis on Southern Italian wine. But apart from that, I've never actually dealt commercially in wine, whereas Jon, my associate, has been dealing commercially in wine for 13 years.
So when you say 25 years following particularly Southern Italy, you were working in the energy business before, I think.
Yeah, so I've been an executive in the oil and gas industry for many years. I started in the business or in the industry for about 30 years ago, and rose through the ranks and reached director level and so on. And when the company I worked for most recently were downsizing very significantly, there was a package there that we signed a deal on, and I exited, and now I'm doing this.
With great joy, so with a great smile on your face. It's quite nice, isn't it, to change career? You know, I don't know how long they'll keep me doing this podcast, but every podcast I think is going to be my last one, so just take every day to come. So, Southern Italy, you have also a passion for Frederick II. And people say, why the hell is Monty asking Ole about Frederick II? Who was he, and why was he so important for Southern Italy?
So, Frederick II was not just important for Southern Italy, but particularly important for Southern Italy. He was Holy Roman Emperor. Basically from about 1194 until about 1250. And he was a person with a singular individual impact on the history of Europe, essentially gathered together what had been smashed apart of his father's empire. But apart from that, instituted a reign of great enlightenment and fantastic achievement. I mean, so the zero, for instance, was introduced to Europe by Fibonacci, but it was introduced in common usage by Frederick II.
To the zero.
The zero, whose administration actually started using it. But apart from that, he was in constant communication with learned people from the Arabic countries and so on. There would quite likely not have been a Renaissance without Frederick II.
And why?
Because he sowed the seeds of all of that. Now, his court was the first court where they wrote in normal Italian rather than Greek or Latin.
So he had an enormous influence on the language.
So everyone thinks it was Dante and the Divine Comedy and so on.
Who came about 300 years later?
Well, yeah, 300 years later. Those were the guys who started it at Frederick II's court. He was excommunicated by the Catholic Church three times. Taken back in when he did stuff. He was king of Jerusalem. He was a lover of everything Arabic. His lifeguard was Arabic. He moved the Arabs from Sicily to Puglia, to Lucera, in order to protect them, and he used them as his lifeguards forever. He toured the world, basically the European world, his world, with an entourage of a harem and animals and many, many interesting things. He was absolutely larger than life, but also had a lasting impact on the history of Europe.
So he was a man with a social conscience, a sense of justice as well.
He was, but in a very strange way, in sort of a very unemotional way. So he did an experiment, for instance, at one point to find out whether the learned people who were discussing whether Latin or Greek was the original language of God. So he took two children and isolated them and had no one speak to them for years. No one ever spoke to them. And what came out of it was gibberish, of course, and they died fairly soon anyway, I mean, after a few years, because they simply, as human beings, could not take the fact that they were not socially engaged.
That they couldn't communicate with anybody.
They could.
So what about his, in terms of architecture, in terms of his design of fortresses, which were very important in those days when there were a lot of marauding bands of soldiers, etc.?
So he constructed fortresses along the coasts of southern Italy in particular, because the Saracens were very, very active at the time. That is more a marked feature, what is left now, of the Aragonese who came after him, but he started that. At the same time, he constructed some very, very interesting buildings, which were not necessarily fortresses, like the very mysterious Castel del Monte in Puglia. he had an impact on architecture, he had an impact on poetry, he had an impact on language, on mathematics, on how to govern a country. He had an impact on removing power from the popes and the fact that legitimacy could only come from the popes. He started the rebellion against that was brought
so
to
local rule, basically, rather than being ruled by a far-off pontiff.
That was brought to its full extent, basically, during the Renaissance and in the period after that.
So he laid the foundations for that, in your view?
Very much so.
Did this idea of free thought...
He was a free thinker, very much, and mocked, popular faith and so on whenever he could.
So he was kind of like a powerful intellectual. He was kind of, we might say, a little bit sort of not trendy, but avant-garde, pushing boundaries and rebelling, but in a very logical way, in a humanistic way.
Very much, very much.
Is that what makes it? I get that from you. When I first met you, you are somebody that engages with everybody.
Yeah.
You're a fantastic communicator, and I would, as I'm sitting next to you at tasting, you give all your knowledge away about the wines that we were tasting down in southern Italy, and I picked up so much information from you. And for me, you're like a humanist, so I can see why you absolutely love Frederick II.
There's a long history of humanism in my family. In the past, part of my family were the first people, or among the first people, who were married outside of church in a town hall. The lady was actually a priest's daughter, so it's a huge scandal. And since then, we've essentially been humanists and non-denominational and so on. So there's that aspect, and it may make me emphasize the humanist aspects of Frederick II quite a lot.
Do you think we need more humanism in our current societies? All the arguments that are going on about silly things like religion and all these things that really we should not be arguing. There's bigger fish to fry.
Absolutely, humanism is suffering at this point in time, and my heart bleeds for the current situation, I have to say, in current, not just European, but world affairs.
Yeah, and people's intolerance towards others because they're different.
Intolerance and willingness to embrace
the other side.
The willingness to embrace absolutist ideologies. And that goes for all sides, and it's a dreadful situation.
Yeah, so my it's only my view counts and your views don't count, so I'm stronger, I'm better than you, I'm stronger than you, and I don't want you living on my patch.
And with current technology, you can rile up people very easily, and you can make them go to each their poles rather than meet in the middle and so on. So, yeah, humanism, I think, is suffering, and we need a renaissance of humanism.
So where does wine fit into your worldview and in terms of the company that you've co-founded, and where are you going to be looking to buy your wine from and why?
That was quite a lot of questions.
It was, but you're a clever guy. You can decipher my mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, so where does wine fit in terms of good life and humanism and brotherhood among people and so on? It does very much so. I mean, whoever has sat together with a person and had a glass of wine with that person and had a decent discussion is better for it, and it moves the world forward. I just came by a shop window today, in fact, which said the Italian equivalent of "whoever does not drink wine has something to hide," which is an old Italian saying, but beautiful, I think.
Right, and what are your sort of favorite grape varieties in a nutshell, and why?
Wow.
And where are you going to focus on for your import company?
So the import company is actually quite widely focused. We want to feature the exciting wines that are being put out today throughout the world, with a huge emphasis on terroir recognizability.
What about native grapes, things like that?
So very much native grapes. For me, that's terroir as well, and very much native grapes. We're not so much into the, mix it all together to make it fit some sort of focus group or anything like that. That's not what we're going for. So in terms of the Danish market, 80% of the wine is sold in supermarkets, and they can have that for themselves. I mean, that's not an interesting market. But then the rest, the 20%, being sold essentially by a bewildering variety of very, very many people and companies, large and small and so on. We have 1,700 registered importers of wine in Denmark.
Brilliant.
And we're a country of 5.5 million people.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we've got just about everything, except the wines that my associate Jon and I are looking for. They're not on the market in Denmark at this point in time. And frankly, we find that they are among the most interesting wines on the world scene today.
Good. So you're sort of looking at a niche within a niche in a small country.
You could say that, yes.
And I have every confidence in you, knowing you and how you were. I think one of the great advantages that you will have, you have many advantages, but you have a fantastic ability to talk to wine producers on their own terms, to get inside their heads in a good way, in a way that they will trust you. And which is so important if you're a wine producer. You don't just want to get paid. You want to work with people that you really trust and who know where you're coming from. And you clearly do.
And vice versa,
yeah,
I have
sure,
to say.
Sure. Yeah. And if all else fails, you can just crack open a bottle of wine and talk about Frederick II.
Absolutely.
Ole, I just want to say thanks. We could have talked for hours, and I want
to
get you
have.
Back. Yeah, no, we want. I love his show. I'm not. I know that was a bit unusual for people listening, but if you don't know some of the backstory about history and what Ole was saying about the whole situation in the Mediterranean several hundred years ago, and you know, people traveling and fighting and winning and losing, and grape varieties, the spread of grape varieties was absolutely linked to what was going on politically with, you know, Ole said, the popes and the emperors, etc., etc., etc. So it really is worth thinking about that kind of thing as a little bit of a backstory to why X grape tastes as it does, because trial and error, it landed somewhere and it stuck.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Ole. You're a superstar.
Thank you, Martin. You are the superstar.
Thanks.
I'm just a sideshow here.
Thanks, Ole. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.